I repeat, what other show can you get such a mix of music on? We go from Benny Bell in the 1940s doing his little song about apple pie, all the way to brand new music from a band called Shoo Shoo doing the song High off their new CD, Always. The band Shoo Shoo was put together and is led and created and fostered by its lead singer and songwriter. His name is Jamie Stewart. He's on the phone with us, I believe, and I'd love to talk to him about the band and his music. So, Jamie, can you hear me? Are you there?
Yep. Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. How you doing? Are you excited about coming to Denver, Colorado?
Yeah, we haven't played there in a couple of years, and it's always a town I enjoy being in, so yes, looking forward to it.
Great, great. Anyway, congratulations on the new album. And I guess the place to take to start the conversation is, how do you feel that this album is different from the, you know, albums and the EPs that you have done before? What progress have you made? And how are the connections to the old music as well?
I will do my best to answer that, but I think I might be the wrongest person in the entire world to answer that question.
Okay.
Not really having any sort of distance or objectivity around it. This record was the most collaborative one that we've ever done. Other people wrote lyrics for it, and other people wrote completed songs. We introduced some new influences, which we hadn't really explored so much before, that being krautrock and really early kind of academic 1950s and early 60s Brazilian electronic music was a big influence for this also. But as far as connections to other records, each of the records that we have done has been always a document about people that we are close to in the period of time in which we are writing the songs of the record. So writing about the events of and politics seems to be the most sort of emotionally mm-hmm. prescient and pertinent to us at the time we were working on the record.
Actually,
I
was reading some material about you, and that one of your previous albums was quite influenced by the fact that George Bush was in office at the time, George W. Bush, and of course, like everybody else, you hated him. And was when George Bush left office and Obama came in, did you heave a sigh of relief, but then wonder, oh my God, what am I going to write about now?
I certainly felt I don't know if I necessarily felt relieved. I felt curious. I mean, obviously, I would vastly prefer Obama over George Bush, but you know, he's still a politician for a party that's essentially equally corporately backed, like any large political party in the United States. I mean, of course, I'll vote for him in the next election, but it's not like the world has become an infinitely better place since Obama has been in office. It's certainly I'm not embarrassed of the President of the United States anymore, but he's a politician like anybody else.
Very true. Very true. By the way, let's now roll it really back to the beginnings of the band, which I have to admit, I until like 2-3 weeks ago, when I realized you guys were coming to Denver, had not really been familiar with Shoo Shoo or your stuff. So I did read that you got the name of the band from a Chinese film called Shoo Shoo. What was it about that movie? Was it just like, oh, that's a cool title? Or were there more connections to actually what's in the film itself?
No, the person that I started the band with, Corey McCulloch, and I both saw the movie at about the same time. And essentially, it's about a young woman during the Cultural Revolution in China, and every time that she is trying to improve her situation in life, she ends up making things worse. And that seemed to be about the same case for Corey and myself also. I mean, obviously, the problems that she was having, the problems that we were having, had nothing to do with each other. But the fact that every attempt that she made to change things just kind of dug her into a deeper pit, and Corey and I, at the time, could both really relate to that, and to her as a character. Shoo Shoo is the name of the character.
Okay, that makes sense. What if it's not too personal, what horrible problems were you guys having at the time when you were trying to form a band?
It's a fairly long list.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
Fair enough. Well, that's the thing. That's the other, when you start reading reviews and interviews with you, everybody assumes that you often write, because you often write very dark, gloomy, depressing music, that you yourself are a very dark, gloomy, depressive person. Is that fair? Or
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, I would say it probably makes up the majority of my personality, but I mean, I also like cats, and you know, I like going bird watching too. So I mean, it's, you know, only emotion I ever feel, but unfortunately, that aspect of things is, well, yeah, it's high on the list of my day-to-day experience.
Well, if you mean that you like Cats the Musical, I can understand why you're depressed.
Oh, why I'm so depressed? Because I like Cats the Musical. Yeah, that's mostly why I have such a problem with life, is because of musicals.
But I mean, not to be too personal, but then again, your albums are so autobiographical in some ways. Are you a medicated depressed person, or is it just you're generally gloomy and you've never been actually diagnosed?
I have been diagnosed, and I've tried. I've tried a few things, two of which I really, really, really did not like, and one of which did a lot of good for me, and on and off it on occasion. This sounds really melodramatic, but I find it kind of difficult for me to play music if I'm ever on anything, and it seems to be a little bit better for me just to deal with it that way rather than through medication. But I know that, you know, taking pills for some people is a, you know, difference between life and death. I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all. Obviously, it can be really helpful for people, but for me, with my body chemistry, it really just seems to make things just more confusing.
And hopefully, you know, we'll crawl out of this personal stuff in a bit to talk more about the music and the career and stuff. But I am kind of curious: was your personality developed this way before what happened to your dad, or was that sort of the catalyst?
Oh, before.
It
certainly didn't help, but no, it has been something I've been struggling with for most of my adult life.
Well, is there that fear because your dad killed himself that you might? Have you ever been suicidal?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. I mean, how close?
Like on a scale of 1 to 10?
Okay.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Pretty close. I mean,
wow. I mean, close enough that it was just a cry for help, or close enough like, you know, you were this close off the ledge, sort of thing.
I don't really do anything half cocked, so I'll leave it at that.
Wow. Well, does. I mean, then the obvious question is music therapy for you?
It is certainly makes self-perpetuation possible for me.
So, in other words, if you have nothing else to look forward to, you know that you can go into the studio and do a song, and that'll get you through the day?
It's certainly the way that I organize my emotional life.
Wow.
Now, I mean, having done this band for the last 10 years, I'm completely dependent on it.
Well, then also another question is, I mean, it's obviously a small group configuration, but it's gone through a lot of different permutations just over the past decade. Is that because just a natural evolution, like you want to move on with different people, or you don't, maybe you're tough to get along with? Why so many different players over the past few years?
It's really dependent on each person. Some people, you know, I had a baby and just didn't, I mean, we tour a lot, and, you know, somebody just obviously didn't want to be on tour for 7 months a year, which is totally reasonable if you have a child.
Sure.
You know, some people will wanted to work with other bands, which is reasonable. Some people have school commitments, and some people have gotten fired. Because they were rotten people and rotten musicians. So,
good Lord.
The sort of core people who've worked on the band have actually been there for quite a long time. Chess Smith has worked on the band since the very beginning. Greg Sonnier has been involved in the band since we started. Angela Saw has been in the band and to different degrees since 2006. When Carolyn McElroy was in the band, she played in the band for 6 years. So, you know, the people who have really made the biggest contributions to the playing have been there for a very, very long period of time. There have been a few kind of tangential people who've come and gone. But the core members have actually been pretty solid for the duration of the band.
And I guess that question kind of leads into your choice to keep it called Shushu as opposed to going out and just saying, well, Jamie Stewart with
Soulful. Well, no, I mean, it's definitely a band. I mean, I think that people assume that the singer of every band is completely responsible for everything. But, the best work that Shushu has ever done has certainly been collaboration.
Nice. Okay. By the way, we are talking with Jamie Stewart, who is not the only person of Shushu. Let's make that clear. Okay. He is the guiding force, let us say, of Shushu. So let me ask you, rolling it back all the way to childhood and the things that shaped your perspective as a person and also as a composer, lyricist, and musician. Can you point to elements of growing up that where you knew, ooh, I'm going to be a songwriter, or ooh, this is going to be like my personality?
That was real curious for me. My dad was in the music business, and I listened to a lot of records as a kid, like all kids. But there wasn't, neither of my parents really particularly, in a pointed way, encouraged me to become involved in music. But at the same time, it was around me all of the time. And, you know, all of my parents' friends were musicians. But they knew what a difficult life it was, so it wasn't like they said, oh, this is the greatest thing in the entire world, you've got to do it. You have to join the family business or something like that. So I felt really, as a young person, really pulled hard in two directions, just the natural wonderfulness of music being all around me all the time, but then again, kind of being told about how rotten the life can be as well. I don't think I became completely and totally devoted to it until Shushu started. I played in bands my whole life since I was maybe 12 or something like that. But Shushu was the first band that I really completely put my whole heart into. I think probably the record Purple Rain, which I got as a kid, the print record, really I think opened up the door to me as to what the possibilities of music could be.
Was it because
it could be incredibly experimental but incredibly pop at the same time, and also be very personally revealing, and also be very dissonant but also very beautiful. It was a super influential record for me.
Wow.
Okay. I got that record when I was probably 11 or something.
For a lot of musicians as well. I mean, what bands and people were you listening to before you hit that particular record?
Oh, I mean, I was a real little kid. I mean, when I got that record, so I mean, I was listening to just whatever.
Oh.
Top 40 was. I mean, that was a top 40 record, but I mean, you know, whatever was on, like, I don't even remember what was on the radio at the time. But that was the record that really led me to listening to more quality stuff. And about a year after that, my dad got me an Otis Redding record and a Talking Heads record, and he started buying me other Motown records at the time too, when I was pretty young. So I'm glad I heard those records at a formative age.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't get better than that stuff. And what then do you listen to now that isn't yours?
Let's see. Well, Angela and I recently got a box set of kind of 70s to 90s house music. We've been listening to that a lot lately, from like New York scene house music. This minimalist composer named Morton Feldman, I've been listening to obsessively for about the past year. Francois Hardy, I really love. Diamanda Galas, Nina Simone.
Of course.
I've been the band Suicide, I've been listening to like crazy lately.
Wow, okay.
Usually I'll just listen to kind of like a small amount of stuff, but listen to it over and over again.
And do you listen to it as a casual, well, certainly not casual fan, but are you dissecting it, or are you able to just sort of listen and enjoy?
That's a very interesting question, because I go back and forth with that a lot. Most of the time I find myself dissecting it and trying to basically steal ideas from it. And I have to frequently remind myself to just listen to it to enjoy it, and not listen to it as as part of quote unquote work. I mean, you know, I'll get more a lot out of it if I'm not analyzing it and panicking, you know, while I'm listening to it all the time about, you know, how I could possibly do something anywhere near as good as that.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that is the. I mean, as an occasional songwriter myself, and there's always that wonder of like, wow, hasn't every song already been written? Hasn't somebody already done this chord structure, you know, 10 times already? And are there words I can string together that somebody hasn't thought of first? Do you ever go through one of those moments?
Not like that so much, but I certainly go through kind of what I just said before, like hearing a particular song that is unfathomably wonderful and wondering, you know, what the point of me continuing to work is when anything I do is not even nearly as good as this will ever be. You know, like what is the point of putting something into the world? And when there's so much unbelievably great music, like what's the point of putting something into the world that's not as good as that when there's already something that great? But listening to it like that also really kind of kicks me in the ass to try as hard as I can to do something that is as good as it could be. So it's a real kind of push-pull relationship.
Now, as you also said, that the latest incarnation of Shushu, I guess your second in command would be Angela. How did you guys hook up? How did she become part of the fabric?
We've been best friends for probably 6 or 7 years, and Kara Lee, who had been in the band, as I mentioned, for several years before, left the band to start playing in a different group. And, you know, I know Angela's a really fantastic keyboard player, and it made sense for us to start working together. We have a lot of the same sensibilities, obviously, because we're best friends, we get along real well. And she's a really fantastic natural musical ability, and I trust her opinion. And she also is an incredibly aggressive player, which really forces me to play harder, too. I'm a much better player for having worked with her. She's been a real big inspiration to me.
Do you find yourself wanting to balance the electronic instruments and the digital stuff with, you know, real, actual wooden guitars and piano things and actual drums?
You know, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear what you said. Can you say that again?
I was saying, do you find yourself sometimes wondering about the balance in your music between digital and completely electronic instruments, and also making sure that there's also old-fashioned guitars and drums and sounds of pianos and things like that?
I never really think about it consciously. I mean, we think a lot about how particular chambers and particular instruments can support the emotional idea of a song, or what kind of combinations of sounds, you know, feel like what the song is about. But you know, for some songs that's completely organic, and for some songs that's, you know, completely electronic. But you know, I mean, I don't feel the need to, you know, put both approaches on the scale of justice and make sure it's an even weight or anything.
Cool. We are talking with Jamie Stewart of the band Shushu. They're going to be in Denver playing at the Bluebird Theater this Wednesday, and we're very happy to have them here in the neighborhood. And wanted to ask about shock for shock's sake. And again, as a writer and performer, I straddle that line of wanting to do things that are just, you know, pushing the envelope a bit. And you kind of do that all the time with the band. I assume that is conscious.
Oh, I mean, we never do anything just for the sake of being shocking. I mean, we write about the things that are important to us, or events that have happened to people that we care about, or in our own lives, or in politics, and people can choose to be shocked by them or not, but the point is to try to be as honest as we can. The point is never to try to freak somebody out.
Well,
people
okay.
respond to it however they're going to respond to it.
But you, all right, for example, you've got
I mean, I'm not saying that nothing we write about could not be construed as shocking to some people, but that's not the motivation for doing it.
Okay, that's fair. It's just like you'll have people who'll say about your video, "Dear God, I hate myself,"
sure.
which I guess is about anorexia, bulimia, because it's all about you're eating a chocolate bar while the other person in the video throws up. essentially.
Right.
I mean, was that basically, okay, it's going to be shocking, but our point is about...
Yeah, I mean, the reason for doing it was to put the point of the song across. That was the only reason. And, you know, and for some people, they were able to relate to that and get something out of it, and some people could only be freaked out about it because they're, you know, small-minded and reactionary lunatics. But, you know, there's that kind of people in the world no matter what you do.
Well, yeah, and
I'm looking at a group of them right now, standing on the steps of a frat house.
They would be. They're there. Although, actually, I have to ask: was it real vomit or was it oatmeal mixed with, you know, paste or something?
Quite real.
Wow. Okay. I hope they got they're a SAG check or something for doing that. Cool.
Oh yeah, that was Angela.
Good for her. I guess, was she okay after the shoot?
Not quite.
Oh. How could she... All right, she just her fingers down? Oh, I don't want to know. Okay. Anywho, speaking of also kind of shocking topics, but for a purpose, you do have a song. I mean, you know this is going to push buttons when you have a song on your new CD called I Love Abortion, and you even spelled love, L-U-V. What is... yeah, okay. Just go. I'm gonna give you that title, and then what are you putting out with a title like that?
Well, I mean, there for me, there were two reasons for doing that song. Half of the song is about a young woman who I'm acquainted with, and her going through the issue of having abortion. She's actually from Denver, and the way that she approached it was that, you know, she knew that at some point in her life she was, you know, a very young person at the time, 18. She knew that she wanted to become a mother, but there was no possible way that, you know, at 18 she could be the kind of mother that could really give a child the kind of love that it deserved. So, you know, she became very attached to the, you know, sort of future amorphous ghost baby, but decided to essentially have an abortion out of a sense of love for this child. And I was really struck by how bravely she went about the whole thing. So part of the song is about her story and a tribute to her gigantic heart. And the other side of doing it is to attempt to write a song that is as aggressively pro-choice as the right wing tends to be, as aggressively anti-choice. The left wing tends to be really flabby about the issue of abortion, and the right wing tends to, you know, go out and, you know, murder people over it. It's an attempt to be as aggressive as they are.
I'm curious, the woman, your friend, this person that this all happened to, did she end up hearing the song, and have you talked about it with her?
I know that she's heard it because I sent her a copy of the record, but we haven't discussed it.
So what songs on the new album were difficult to get through, and which are the ones that you wrote in like 20 minutes just because, you know, they came?
Oh, the song Gol Mudin was incredibly difficult to do. It was one of the first ones we started writing, and I think the last one we actually finished. I'm not exactly sure why. It's not a particularly technically difficult song, but just getting the music together was, I think, I know it took forever to make that one feel like it was working, and the song you just played, High, actually came together really, really quickly. Just one of those really lucky moments where just all the chords and all the words were there, and it actually probably about 20 minutes. It took a long time to record, because I think we recorded like 7 or 8 different versions of it, but the actual writing of it was. Just the muse was very generous that day, and it was just all there.
Amazing how that does work. And then the oldest question that people ask singers, songwriters, and composers is, music first, lyrics first, or it depends on the song?
Oh, it depends on the song.
Makes total sense. And another question I have for you is, some of the people that you have collaborated with, was a little amazed, not amazed, that's not right, but that you've worked with Devendra Banhart, who I can see he does freak folk, but it's not really certainly musically where you go as far as the electronica and the industrial. What was that pairing about?
Oh, well, we didn't actually collaborate. Shushu covered one of his songs, and he covered one of our songs, but we didn't do it together in the studio or anything like that. We did a tour together several years ago, and we got to know each other through that.
And, well, what's he like?
He's a wonderful person, incredibly professional, super, super funny, really talented, very generous, a lot of fun, super dedicated to music. He's a great guy. I can't say enough nice things about him.
What? Great. Yeah. I'm not, by the way, looking for... A lot of people, when I'm doing interviews and I ask them about other celebrities or famous people that they've dealt with, they think I'm looking specifically for dirt. But I'm just looking for
anecdotes. I'll talk smack about anybody, but, you know, but there's nothing bad to say about that guy. So,
who do you want to talk smack about? Who was horrible? Whom have you worked with that you would never touch again with a 10-foot pole?
Well, I've never worked with anybody who sucked, but we've certainly toured with people who were pretty rotten people and unbelievably vile musicians.
Such
as? But luckily, all the collaborations we've done have always been with people who we had a lot of respect for and were friends with and or fans of. All the collaborations we've done have been very fruitful and always really excellent experiences. Been really lucky in that way.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the collaborations, but who have you toured with that you would love to throw under a semi?
I'm doing my level best to get over it and no longer wallow in it. So, but, you know, I mean, if anybody looks at the list of people that we're touring with, I think they can possibly guess.
Okay, fair enough. Or if you just have a list on your website of people you've toured with, and some of them are in red ink, and some of them are in green.
Yeah, some of them are in red with a big middle finger icon next to it, then they'll be able to figure it out.
And I guess the other subject that are you pretty out there and strong on, although kind of an interesting take on it in interviews that I've read with you, is that on one level, I guess you're out there as a bisexual person, and yet you identify as gay/queer. Is that a fair statement?
I don't identify as gay. I identify as bi or queer. I mean, people a lot of times assume that I'm gay, but I'm not. I never have been. I've never said I have been. I'll either say that I'm queer or bi, and that's accurate.
Well, gay would be one. Queer is not. Well, I'm sorry. What is the difference between queer and gay? I really don't know.
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of definitions for it. For me, I mean, my definition of queer would just be not straight.
Okay. As opposed...
and you know, I mean, if you're getting down to the mechanics of my sexual orientation, it would be bi. But let's see. How can I put? This is going to be a really stupid way of putting this, but if you were to say that straight was white, then queer would be like saying, you know, people of color or some outdated term like that.
Okay, and but gay
just
would
sort
be
of
black.
Queer kind of covers the whole not straight sexual experience.
So there's kind of all right. So and then the other question is, in the personal sense, are you dating? Are you in a relationship?
That is private, Mister.
Oh. Okay, well, you don't have to name names, but you don't even want to say, like, yes, there's been someone you've been with for half a year or whatever, or you're out there looking whatever.
Both.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, are there any songs on Always that are a clue?
Always is really, with the exception of one song, not a particularly autobiographical record. With the exception of one song about other people or about politics.
Okay. And which is the song that's about you?
Black Drum Machine.
Black Drum Machine is specifically about, well, we may go out with that one. I want to remind everybody that Jamie Stewart and Angela Chow and Shushu, of course, are going to be at the Bluebeard Theater this Wednesday, May 23rd in Denver. They've also got their new CD out called Always, and they've got a bunch of older CDs and EPs, including Knife Play and The Promise and Fabulous Muscles and The Air Force. And what are you working, now that Always is out there and you're touring behind it, are you busy writing new songs or you don't have new time for it because you're touring, or what's bubbling now?
Just trying to get a new record together. It's real difficult to do on tour, but... the person who mixed our last record, John Congleton, is also a really good record producer, and he gave me some suggestions about how to approach our next record, so I've been working on some sketches for it. But after this set of touring is done, I'll be home for the summer and really dig in really deeply to start writing the next jam.
And by the way, before I let you go, also one of the things that intrigued me when I first started researching the band is you have a very interesting and unusual website. It's not just like a MySpace page, and it's not just, here's the band, here's a couple of 30-second clips from the tracks, and here's some photos from live performances. I mean, your website is like this whole other world thing. What was the conception behind that?
I think the conception behind it was to not really have a conception behind it. I have described it this way before, but it's essentially just letting it run wild. There's really no parameters for it. Maybe 10% of it is about the band, and you know, if we have a new record, we'll obviously talk about that and list tour dates and things like that. But otherwise, you know, we'll list anything on there from you know, a cute picture of a bunny to a fairly long spree about a political issue, or about being depressed, or a video art that we like, or we used to put a lot of pornography on it, but our current label got really freaked out about that, so we opened up the 18 and over section, and in the 18 and over section, we asked people to send in photos of different body parts of theirs. We really think of it a lot more as an art project and less as a band website. I mean, it is our central website, but we basically just try to do, or basically try not to think too hard about it, and just put anything up there that's interesting to us.
Cool. And I'm sure as soon as you said the word pornography, half our listeners started Googling ShooShoo and trying to find your website. So. Go look for, and remember that ShooShoo is spelled X-I-U, X-I-U. And it features Jamie Stewart, has been just a marvelous and very open and terrific guest to talk to. Last question for Jamie Stewart. What books are you reading these days?
I am just finishing a book called Half-Life by V.S. Naipaul. He's one of my favorite writers. And what's the name of that prison book again? And I'm just starting this book about prison life called In the Valley of the Beast.
In the Valley of... By the way, was that Angela whom you just asked, or is that the partner you want to talk... Oh, yeah, that's Angela. Cool. Okay, just checking. Jamie Stewart, thank you. You've been absolutely delightful. I hope you stay undepressed for a very, very, very long time, except when you're writing a song, and then you can write it any way you please.
Oh, wait, man, I can't write anything when I'm depressed. I just want to sit and drink and pet my cat when I'm depressed.
Drink and pet your cat. Well, again, it's still better than going to see cats. Virtually.
Yeah, true enough.
Thank you, Jamie Stewart. We're going to go out with Black Drum Machine from the band ShooShoo. See them in Denver this Wednesday. And Jamie, thank you so much for being in the neighborhood.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Have a great one. Bye-bye now.